And now it's time for a Nutty Debate.
Well, we all know how Nutty Bites starts. Welcome to Nutty Bites live at Balticon 2014. Woo! Today we are going to be debating George R. R. Martin versus Robert Jordan. And many of you are saying, wait, aren't they the same guy? No, they're not, they're not. Even though they were often confused as the same guy and would sometimes pretend to be each other at cons. But they are both some epic, epic writers, and we've got a great panel for you today. Tech has not been able to join us, even though he is on the program. Unfortunately, the Queen needed him more. We have his replacement, Mini Clockwork Doctor, sitting right there. He'll have very little to say, but judging looks throughout the entire panel.
Here in spirit and puppet.
Exactly. So let's introduce our panel, and we're going to start right here with...
I am Savage Opopanax from Flash Pulp and Flash Cast of Skinner Co.
And your website? Come on, lady.
Skinner Co.
Flashpulp.com.
Skinner. I'm glad you know it.
.fm.
Yes.
Skinner.fm.
There you go.
Hey. I'm Jennifer Liang. I'm the chair of JordanCon, the Wheel of Time convention in Atlanta, Georgia. And I also run Dragonmount.com, the massive Wheel of Time fan site. And I've done a whole bunch of other Wheel of Time fan-related things.
Which is awesome. Thank you. Woo. And we have Miss Laura Nicole.
Hi, I'm Laura Nicole of the Gypsy in the Attic podcast and author of Stoneforever Case Files. And my website is www.gypsylaura.com.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay, so, show of hands real quick just to get an idea. How many of you actually listen to Nutty Bites already? Not just friends of mine. How many of you listen? Okay, and how many of you, this is your first time knowing what is this? Nutty garbage. Okay. But this is awesome because I'm seeing right there, we've got Ms. She was Donna Noble last night, and that was awesome. And Mike, he joined the Beyond the Wall podcast and won our t-shirt. Beyond the Wall being another podcast that I do, you might see a little slant here. That's right. I'm a George R. R. Martin girl. Love him.
Boo. I'll fight you.
Who booed?
Kevin, we haven't gotten started yet. God,
I know. Meanwhile, he's a George R. R. Martin fan jerk. Anyway,
Grantland all the way.
It's a little bit saucier than the normal Nutty Bites show, but if there is swearing, I am going to be bleeping you out with a potato. So,
a potato?
You've not listened to Nutty Bites, have you?
Not to the potatoes.
Anytime a guest swears, they are replaced with
potato.
A very monotone. Potato.
See, now
taco.
That makes me want to swear a lot.
It really just makes me want to have a potato taco.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Sounds delicious.
So when I say debate, when I say debate, I mean a loose, fun thing. We're not going to be out and out. There's no antagonist. I mean, George and Robert were really great friends, so why can't we be friends? Don't start singing. I know you're all about to do it.
That's your fault. You put it in my head.
I did. But, so we're going to talk about the different merits. We're going to talk about why these two authors are amazing. I mean, you've got two people that have written so many books. I mean, Wheel of Time was 14 books, and 11 of them Jordan was able to write. And you say, oh, well, you know, George R. R. Martin, I mean, he's only got 5 books and A Song of Ice and Fire, but those books really count like 3 books.
Wait.
And there's the wild cards and everything else.
Wait, hey, there's the Princess and the Queen, right?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
And there's the
Duncan
Ice
Egg.
Duncan Egg.
There you
the
go.
Ice Dragon. Have you read that one? It's
Listen,
a children's
buddy.
Book. That's right. George R. R. Martin wrote a children's book. Anyway, not.
But everybody dies, so.
But, so we're just going to loosely talk about it. We're going to talk about our experiences with this and just really show how awesome these two authors are. So, full disclosure.
We love them both.
Yes, we love them both. And that's the point. Like, last year I did Douglas Adams versus Terry Pratchett. And it was great because, I mean, they're both awesome. So, this is going to be a Balticon tradition. So to me, George R. R. Martin is more than just an author, simply because I reading his books is something that I did during the courtship between my husband and I.
Aww.
While we were dating. He went overseas to Afghanistan, and we had a friend, by the way, telling us, you gotta read these books, and we're like, whatever. I don't read fantasy anymore. And my brother and my brother-in-law were like, you gotta read these books, whatever. I even was in a D&D game where my brother was playing Sandor Clegane, and I was like, cool character, but I don't read fantasy. So my husband goes overseas, and out of the lending library, he finds this book with this horrible fantasy cover of a guy with a wearing a black cloak and a wolf, and the wind is blowing, and he's like, okay. And he starts reading it, and he gets hooked. And so, of course, when he comes home, he's like, you've got to read this series. And I'm like, but I don't read fantasy anymore. And he goes, no, you have to read it. So I finally read it, and I go, oh my gosh, this is fantasy for people that don't like fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I tore through them, and by the time I finished, the first three, Feast for Crows had come out, and I was able to do that. And then I had the 6-year wait.
Oh, wow.
So I understand that. I will confess, I have not read The Wheel of Time, but I respect Jordan immensely, especially when I was doing my research and I realized, dude writes a lot. Like, how many pseudonyms does he have?
I don't know off the top of my head. What Robert Jordan's real name was Jim Rickney, and for every genre he wrote in, he had a different pen name. So when he wrote epic fantasy, he wrote as Robert Jordan. When he wrote historical fiction, he wrote as Regan O'Neill. He wrote dance and theater criticism under one name. He wrote academic works under another name. He has a lot of different things he did before The Wheel of Time, and then The Wheel of Time, of course, sucked up all of his other writing time, so he didn't write anything else after that. But yeah, he wrote a lot before The Wheel of Time happened for him. He wrote the novelization for Conan the Destroyer, and he wrote a whole bunch of other Conan books for Tor. That's actually how he was able to pitch The Wheel of Time at Tor. He's like, hey, I wrote all these other fantasy books for you. You know, I can sell books. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, fine. We'll, do whatever. And then there was The Wheel of Time.
Which is really funny. It's like, no, really. I need to convince you that I'm great.
Uh-huh.
I've done all this stuff. And
look
at my Conan.
Yeah. He had to pay his dues. And like, what the story that I've heard, and I've heard this from many people, and it sounds like a fairly reliable story, is he went into Tom Doherty's office. Tom Doherty is the head of Tor Books, and he went in there and he said, hey, I've got this idea for a trilogy. And he sat down and he sort of, he outlined like what would happen in the first book of the trilogy, and it would end with basically what happens in book three. So books 1 through 3 was the first book of what he pitched as The Wheel of Time. It was going to be a single trilogy and everything would happen in 3 books. And Tom Doherty is like, okay, Jim, this sounds really ambitious. Let's do it as a 6-book contract. 6 books, if you need 6, that way you have the room to write the series that you need, and if you end up not using those extra books, you'll write something else for me. And Tom Doherty thinks he was so smart when he did that. So, yeah, and he ended up needing a lot more than 6 books to finish the series, obviously.
Can I ask you, how did you start reading Robert Jordan?
I started reading Robert Jordan. My mom is also a big reader of fantasy, and so she would go and buy books at the bookstore. And so she saw first 3 Wheel of Time books, Eye of the World Through Dragon Reborn, sitting on the bookshelf. So she bought them thinking it was a complete series, and she read the first couple, and she's like, hey, these are pretty good, and gave it to me to read. And then we both realized, oh, crap, there's a whole bunch more of this to go. And so that was in 92. So I was 12 when I started reading them. I'm 34 now, and they just finished last year. So I grew up reading these books. Your story you were telling about how you connected with your husband with Song of Ice and Fire. I met my husband because of The Wheel of Time.
Oh, yeah.
We met on the forums at Dragonmount.
Oh,
yeah.
Can we get a
The internet's a wonderful place.
Now, as a add-on to that, my kilted man and I have recently gotten married back in September. And
yay!
And since then, he's always been like, I have to find the first book of Wheel of Time because I have to share it with you. So I found it mm-hmm. in January. And every day on the drive to work, I will drive to work and he'll be in the passenger seat because he goes to school afterwards. And he will read me a chapter from the Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
So that is how I am becoming immersed in Robert Jordan's world. And I have to say, I enjoy it a lot more than George R. R. Martin because he's much less wordy.
You don't have to
keep
apologize
going.
For your tastes here. You're allowed to like one more than the other.
I've had a lot of juice.
Yes, you have.
I did the same thing with my partners. I read them the first couple of books as well. Every night we would go to sleep and have our couple of chapters before bedtime.
Yeah.
So so everyone on here has a very strong personal connection.
Indeed.
To these authors, at least one of these authors.
So have you read Song of Ice and Fire as well? Or?
So I got halfway through Song of Ice and Fire. And I threw the book across the room because I got really annoyed.
Over what part?
Over his wordiness.
Okay.
I do not need to know what is on the table. I am more interested in what the characters are doing than what they're eating and drinking.
So you have a real problem with extraneous detail. You're going to have a hard time with the
real time. I was going
to
say.
It's going to read that to me.
I hope you like embroidery.
Exactly. So, okay. George R. R. Martin, he'll tell you what's on the table when you're eating, but, you know, Robert Jordan, he's going to tell you exactly what everybody's wearing and how long the grass is and how deep the rivers are.
And the deep mythological significance behind it.
And
exactly.
For some reason, I like that better. Although I have benefited from George R. R. Martin's description of food because in the SCA, we had a group of collegiate SCA members who recreated some of the meals from Song of Ice and Fire,
mm-hmm.
and it was delicious.
There's that lovely cookbook.
Yeah, there's a cookbook for
Feast
it.
For, yes,
mm-hmm.
A Feast of Ice and Fire. I own it. It is fantastic.
Lemon cakes.
If you want to find more information about that one, you can go to inatthecrossroads.com. They are some fantastic women. And those of you who have been at previous Balticons, when I've brought down lemon cakes, can I get a show of applause? That's it?
You
got, the only few people got lemon cakes?
I only got leftovers.
What?
I only got leftovers. I missed scheduled off as the lemon cakes.
That's
my heart still hurts over missing that.
Oh, jeez. You people are horrible. I didn't make them this year because I was just too busy.
Yeah.
But yes, I make
we
lemon cakes.
Okay.
We got Twizzlers. Thank you, Uncle Monster, for sponsoring us with Twizzlers.
Woo!
So, So, yeah, I just basically wanted to go through some full disclosure. Is there anything anybody wants to add about their disclosure
of
these authors?
I used to work as a rental agent, and one of my tenants just had an apartment entirely full of books. He had, no furniture, but he had tables made of books. And he said, you have to read this series. And he brought the series down to my office and said, I'm going to leave these here until you're done. And it worked out beautifully. But for Song of Ice and Fire, it was actually Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont. They were doing it on Sword and Laser.
Yeah.
And I had actually already picked up that book a couple of times, and I couldn't get past the prologue.
A lot of people have problems with the prologue.
It was the prologue, and then once I got through that was fine.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question. For me, as an oral consumer, I love audiobooks, and so having Celts of Man read to me every morning helps me consume Wheel of Time, and currently we're still on Eye of the World, but we're 95% of the way down. So do you think that if I were to go and download Song of Ice and Fire, or would I still get
bored?
Here's
the thing. Now, as many people probably know, Song of Ice and Fire has its own TV show, Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching it.
Roy Dotrice was in that. If you don't know, George R. R. Martin worked with Roy Dotrice on Beauty and the Beast, the TV show. He did some writing for that. Roy Dotrice played the character of Father. He was also in the Game of Thrones books. He played Howlin' the Pyromancer.
Oh, you mean Game of Thrones show?
Yeah,
yes.
He played the pyromancer. Okay.
But George R. R. Martin specifically asked if he would read the audiobooks. So, although...
And he has the Guinness Book World Record for most characters voiced by one person in a single session.
Okay,
for Storm of Swords.
Although,
but,
I very much
yes.
like the audiobooks, and I want them read by the same character throughout, you know, all the books. I read the books before I heard the audiobooks, and so my voices in my head, all those voices in my head, they're all a little different, and it kind of bugs me some of the ways that he reads some of the characters. They all kind of sound like this.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying that while Roy Dotrice has this Guinness Book of World Record, Guinness Book
There's
World
like
Record
three
book,
characters.
Yeah, he does three characters.
Yeah.
He does a pirate. He does a leprechaun.
Yeah.
And he does a pirate leprechaun.
It's true.
I cannot stand Roy Dotrice's reading. And I have made this
it's
perfectly
a little
clear.
Rough.
Roy, if you're listening.
I like him.
I like you as an actor. But it's just too much. And when you start singing, when you start reading varies, they're slurping into the microphone. It just kills me. Oh my gosh, it kills
yeah.
me. As
but
somebody
I,
who
I
podcasts,
need the consistency.
I can't
have Game of Thrones read by Roy Dotrice and then
can we
Clash
can
of
we
Kings
get,
read by
can
somebody
we get
else?
It re-
that
all
me.
Read by
by me.
Someone by you.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a good idea. I was trying to think of somebody in the podcasting world and. Oh my god.
Just anybody?
Dave Robson.
Anybody
like,
that doesn't
oh
sound
my
like
gosh, there's a million people.
The Wheel of Time
you,
audiobooks are done by two readers, a man
oh.
and a woman.
Yeah, let's
and
do that.
So, yeah.
so you got that going.
Wait.
So they divide it up by a viewpoint.
And
Veronica and a woman
Jaguar.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Veronica Jaguar as Cersei.
I could do that.
Yeah.
Can I be Arya?
Oh, now we're
yes.
doing full cast.
Yes.
All right. Continue, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that was just the... they have two readers who do it, Michael Kramer and Kate Redding. And Kate Redding does all the female point of view, and Michael Kramer does all the male point of view characters. And so they just kind of switch back and forth with each other as they read.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
that idea.
Yeah.
I like that idea a lot.
Well, especially since gender is so important in the Wheel of Time, like having it split like that,
yeah.
it makes a difference.
Bailey.
They're actually doing the whole sections for each character.
Yeah, so like if it's an Egwene chapter, you read, Kate reads all of Egwene. Yeah. And then when it switches over to Matt, then Michael is Matt for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so through Wheel of Time, they have the different points of view. Much like George R. Martin has in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, it's not a single
characters. Chapter
devoted to that character, but within that chapter,
yeah.
there'll be different points of view in it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Excellent.
I find it's more with Robert Jordan, like, the places as opposed to the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Excellent. Again?
It's after 11. I think everyone's had a little bit of juice.
I got more over here, so...
There's more juice?
I'm not
going
to ask about the violence, because I think we know who wins on that one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask about the sex.
Oh,
okay.
Wait. Hang on a second. Are we talking, like, canon sex, or, like...
No, we were going to do a whole fan fiction part of this later.
No, I don't even mean fan fiction. I mean, you've got your Game of Thrones show that has, like...
Oh, no, we're just talking
added
books
giant
here.
Amounts of
we're
sex.
We're just talking
about
books
movies.
Just books.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Even the books have more than
they
sex.
That's oh,
yeah.
true.
So,
that's
true. In a way, compare and contrast how both authors deal with sex. Because it's kind of interesting how... When you take a look at one and take a look at the other, and in some ways they're contemporaries, both in when they wrote it, and in some ways there's parallels to their works.
Stiff pink mast.
Thank you.
I think I want to name that and make that the title of the episode. My goodness.
I haven't gotten that far in Wheel of Time. But having only gotten through half of Song of Ice and Fire, it's kind of there.
I'd say there's a really badly written sex in George R. R. Martin's books, but it's just a little bit awkward. Like, I don't want to hear about your purple members or your sniffing past. But
yeah,
Robert Jordan, I find it a little bit more subtle.
Yeah, it's very much like the, and then the two characters go in the bedroom and the lights go down.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so we all know what they did in that igloo. But Susan knows what chapter I'm talking about.
But we
don't see every detail of it, and then we see them like the next morning putting their clothes back on.
But I would say that at the same time, I think George R. Martin is a little less progressive than Robert Jordan was. Like, you see in Robert Jordan's books, you have like polyamory,
mm-hmm.
you have like matriarchal.
Well, when he was writing The Wheel of Time, one of his inspirations for The Wheel of Time was he was sick of reading stories where it was the girl who wants to be the wizard and has to break into the male power structure
mm-hmm.
fantasy land and show all the men that she's just as good. He's like, well, let's reverse it. Let's make it a guy that has to break into a matriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And let's give all the women the in-charge roles and have it be men who are the gender that's downtrodden. And so that's the lens where he's looking at the Wheel of Time and he's doing his world building is the women have been in charge for the last 3,000 years. They're the ones with access to all the power. Most of the societies are matriarchal in nature. What's that like for the dudes?
But then even more on a sexual nature,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like male and female, you have subjects like incest in
yeah.
George R. R. Martin, and they're very taboo. You have things like rape. Incest and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. Whereas in Robert Jordan's books, I find it's presented in a bit more of a lighter atmosphere. Like, you have something taboo like polygamy, but it's presented in a much more accepting nature.
Yeah,
you know?
there is a society that is polygamous in nature, and,
mm-hmm.
and the men have multiple wives, and
yeah.
and they're kind of confused as how they got so many wives.
But it's not even so much they have multiple wives that, you know, they are dominating over.
Mm-hmm.
We like to, on the Flashcast...
The women are in charge. Like, the husband...
We think of it as an equilateral, not
yeah,
an isosceles.
Like, what happens with the Aiel is, to reach a certain rank in the Aiel society as a man, you have to have two wives, because you have to have... I can't remember what it is. It's... you have to have a roof mistress who runs your household for you, and then you have to have a wise one who's your advisor.
Yeah.
And they both have to be married to you. And so if you're lucky, you get to pick one of those. And then your roof mistress or your wise one picks the second one for you, and hopefully you like her.
And it's not presented as a taboo, which
mm-hmm.
I really like. Because, again, when you look at George R. R. Martin, a lot of the sexuality is taboo.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not presented like that.
I feel like George uses sex in the same way that he uses violence. Like, you get,
mm-hmm.
as you said, the details
intrigue.
You're not interested in.
Yeah.
But he gives as much detail in the sex scenes as he does in a violent
mm-hmm.
scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he's often quoted as saying, you know, I can describe decapitation of a man's head or sewing a wolf's head onto a corpse's body and nobody has a problem, but the moment I start talking about sex, it's whoa.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what?
It's just, it's not that good.
And you're right. He will have mention of, like, things that, you know, some things are meant to shock, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Having sex in a sept or whatever. And other things, like, he will mention certain things. For instance, My huge crush, Oberyn Martell, is totally polyamorous and it's fantastic. Just, and well, it's more than polyamorous too, because
yeah, it's just very open.
Sexuality is just
mm-hmm.
all over the map, and
well, it holds still long enough. Yes, I'm having sex with that.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, it's not just I'll have sex with anything. It's I will take pleasure in.
Mm-hmm.
All
I'll
the beauty
try
that is the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Captain Jack Harkness of restaurants.
Yes! Oh my god! Who's gonna write that slash for me? Captain Jack and Oberyn Martell.
I think it's probably already up.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's Rule 34, it's there. But yeah, no, I agree completely. I will say that a lot of times when I'm reading, I am not happy seeing sex described in a book that is not an erotic book, because
yeah.
all of a sudden it can feel very jarring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will say that it's never done without a point in mind. in George's books.
That's true.
And that to me is essential. And can you is it the same with Jordan? Like when there's a sex scene, is it just and then they had sex because well that's what
I
you
don't
do.
I think so. It's usually character advancement.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's not just and then these two people are randomly having sex somewhere. There's a reason why they're doing it.
Which I love.
You have Rand and his wives, and you have Matt and his
lady friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's very.
But yeah, it's sex is very casual in the Wheel of Time. One of the conceits of the book is that not only are women very in charge of themselves, but also there's free available birth control, and it's like so they can have all the random sex they want, and it's not a big deal because they can just drink Heartleaf tea and they're cool.
And again, you have that in George R. R. Martin, but it's taboo in George R. R. Martin.
And
you have the TNT.
It's not really a good thing.
Yeah.
It causes pain.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Drinking your moon tea is fine and everything, but sometimes it doesn't work and you got to drink the tansy tea,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Exactly, like the whole thing with Hoster Tully and Lysa.
There's a bit in the Wheel of Time where one of the women is fussing another one, like, you just had sex with this guy and you didn't drink the Heartleaf tea. What did you expect to happen?
Yeah.
Like, you should have had... And she's like, yeah, but I really just wanted to get pregnant.
But in the Wheel of Time, that's actually more of an open secret. Because how to use all the herbs is yet another a way that women maintain power in that world. So
there's
like,
definitely knowledge that's only accessible to women.
Very interesting.
But the men don't necessarily know that the women have this.
I kind of always loved the character of
Nynaeve.
And her, like, you don't like it, I'm going to whack you over the head with a stick attitude, you know? He is very good at writing strong women.
Yes.
And I want to say George R. R. Martin is also good at writing strong women, but... not to the same degree.
The difference is that Martin's women are
agency taken away from them.
Martin's women are inhabiting a world where they don't have a lot of power to begin with, and so they're reacting to that. In Jordan's world, the women have a lot of power, and they don't need to try to fight for it. They just got it already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The interesting thing in Jordan's world is you see women as they attain power, and as they attain power, their attitudes on the relative intelligence of their compatriots changes drastically. The more empowered they are, the more stupid they think they're.
Everyone else is an idiot now that I'm in charge.
So, yes.
I'm sorry. Nynaeve thinks everyone else is stupid.
But that's because she's
that's
in charge of her village.
She's
the village
wise
woman.
She's
the
wise woman,
Yeah. And she's the youngest wise woman in forever, and she's too young to be a wisdom, and so she first has to prove herself over and over again to these older women in the village all the time because they think she's too young. But also, she's in charge, and so therefore everybody else has to be an idiot.
And a lot of women butt heads in that book,
whereas
you don't have a lot of woman on woman headbutting going on at George R. R. Martin.
Yeah,
You have Cersei, you have Marjorie,
but it's mostly because
it's
not just crazy.
It's Cersei versus the world, but it's also Cersei versus every other woman.
Yeah.
I mean, she. It's one thing for her to have butt heads with a man, but she's like, well, it's a man's world, and that's what she's dealing with, and she attributes it to that, but she has very specific hatred for other women.
Don't ever call me mother.
Yeah, especially women that may be called queens sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say anymore because I'm not going to spoil anyone.
But then you see things like Sansa and Miranda Royce, and they, they form a bit of a bond there.
Oh, yeah.
You see, like, a bit of, women in relationships bonding, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, like, women fighting women.
There's the mother-daughter relationship between Catelyn and Sansa. Yeah.
Which is rough, but what can you do?
But you also get the whole bit where Kat has in her head, like, oh, my sister's awesome. She hadn't seen her in 20 years. She goes and sees her sister, and she's like, whoa.
Holy crap. So you're in a bed.
I don't know who she is. Is something wrong? Yeah.
When did you get on the train to Crazy Town?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Crazy Town is hard here.
So, speaking of women relationships, I do really like, because I'm still in the first book, so please bear with me, but... And I really like the back and forth with Nynaeve, who is young and fiery and moves kind of like water, or tries to, and going against Moiraine, who is, you know, pretty much the mountain.
Very stoic, right?
Very stoic, very much the pattern weaves as it will.
Mm-hmm.
And Moiraine's like, I don't believe you, this is... I know everything, even though Moiraine knows...
And it's a little bit hate each other at first, you know?
Yeah.
But then they, you know, end up...
Well, I never got
that.
I never got the hate from Moiraine.
Moraine, yeah, she doesn't really...
She's
like...
She
doesn't
really...
Child. Yeah, she's like, okay.
She's patronizing.
That's so
yeah,
cute, the way
exactly.
You're nibbling at my ankles like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but Nynaeve, you know, really doesn't like Moiraine at first.
She's
because,
got something to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she thinks Moiraine is ruining everyone's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to move on to another segment, and I want to talk about the influence that these authors have had on society and geek culture. And who do you think has a bigger impact?
Currently?
Ooh. Currently, it's
currently,
definitely Martin.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
definitely Martin
TV show,
because of the publicity, yeah.
Yeah. But then, prior to the TV show, if you did a Google search for Wheel of Time versus A Song of Ice and Fire, you would get way more hits
Wheel
for
of Time,
Wheel
yeah.
of Time. Yeah. But then the TV show came out and just blew everything else out of water.
Is anybody here familiar with Terry Goodkind's Sword of Truth series?
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, I know!
I only read like the first couple.
Well, I got to the second book, and there was the Society of Ladies
yes.
that hold all the power. I'm like, oh,
mm-hmm.
the Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay, that's where we got that.
Yeah.
See, as much as I love George R. R. Martin, and because I've loved him for so long, I can sit here, though, and say that Jordan, I think, has been more of an influence, definitely overall. I didn't put that specifically current or overall, because as a geek, everybody heard of Robert Jordan.
Yeah.
Whether you read him or not.
Mm-hmm.
It was always, you know,
oh,
have
yeah.
you read The Wheel of Time? When he passed and Brandon Sanderson took over, I mean, this was topic. This was hot
yeah.
news. I would try to tell people about A Song of Ice and Fire and they're like, what?
Yeah.
Never heard of that. What are you talking about? No, that's a really big book. So what exactly is it about?
Yeah.
And it was almost like trying to get people to listen to podcasts. I mean, telling them about A Song of Ice and Fire, nobody wanted to do anything.
Well,
and
which came first, right? Like... Would George R. R. Martin have gotten into such epic fantasy if there wasn't
no.
such a big market for it already?
So what happened is Robert Jordan's series started publication first, and George Martin came out a few years later. And at that point, Robert Jordan already had a huge following. And so they gave Jordan the first A Song of Ice and Fire book and said, hey, can you read this and do a review for it? We'll do a cover quote. And Robert Jordan gave it a really good review and gave it a good cover quote. And so having Robert Jordan's name on the cover is
yeah.
what made a lot of
big
people
deal.
Pick up. I mean, that's
yeah.
why I picked up A Song of Ice and Fire, because Robert Jordan said it was good.
Yeah.
You know, there's actually House Jordan.
Yes.
In the
House
Lands
Jordan
of Tor.
And the Door. Yep.
Yeah.
There's,
nice
a, there's another
reference there.
To Archmaester Rigney, who believes
yep.
that time is a wheel.
That's right.
Yep.
Is Robert Jordan,
one
because his
maesters.
Name was James Rigney.
I remember
yeah.
when I was reading that and I was like,
yes.
This sounds a lot like. And then Google and I go,
yep.
Yay.
Wait, his name is Rigney?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, there is definitely. I love how the two of them were. They seemed, at least,
mm-hmm.
to be such good friends. And,
yeah, I don't think they were, like, super best friends or anything like
they
that.
Were, like,
they
were, like, friends.
Yeah, they,
yeah.
Would, they would hang out with each other.
Playing
they would go out to
other,
dinner.
You know?
And,
yeah,
they,
yeah.
They definitely did pretend to
yeah.
be each other at conventions sometimes. Just
Which
to,
is pretty great.
They were, they're very large, bearded men, so they
yeah.
would, you know, try to trick each other that way.
Jordan was no, like, Melinda Snodgrass to or anything like that. But, you know, con friends. And if anyone who has listened to Martin's podcast... like 10 or 12 episodes long, and he did it back in like 2006 or something. He actually talks about, you know, all the little things that they would do, and
mm-hmm.
I just think that's fantastic. And I wonder, this follow up, I wonder in 30 years, who do you think will be more influential?
I am going to have to go with George R. R. Martin because he's got the TV show. And people are going to remember the TV show.
But what if a Wheel of Time has a TV show?
Can you picture a Wheel of Time TV show, though?
I can picture an animated series.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah, but, I mean, look at the Tark Tower. They've been trying to make so much of that for so long.
Wheel of Time's been in development hell for, like, 20 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's so much to it. That
are you saying that
they
get Wonder Woman
justice.
Before Wheel of Time?
You might get Wonder Woman before Wheel of Time.
There's
yeah.
hope.
I just want to say the creator of Wonder Woman, a polygamist.
Oh, yes, yes.
True.
And the inventor of the first lie detector test.
The Lasso of Truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin,
follow on. What do you think about the relatively high magic of Jordan versus the relatively low magic of Martin would play into that legacy that you're asking? Because I think it plays directly into the current success of Martin's TV show right now.
Well, that's a good question. One of the reasons why the TV show is relatively easy to adapt is because you're not doing as many special effects.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's easier for people to get into when they're not thinking of it as high fantasy.
Yeah, because it's basically the War of Roses, but with dragons.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I liked about the TV show. Unfortunately, like I said, I haven't been able to get into the books because it's goddamn wordy. but I liked that he eased you in so that the magic mm-hmm. became believable by the time it was there.
Yeah, it sort of eases you into the process
mm-hmm.
instead of throwing you into a pond.
And where Jordan is concerned, I came into it knowing that this was going to be high fantasy. So when Trollocs come in, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I was expecting mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, you've got your Trollocs, and then, you know.
And then you've got your Aes Sedai, and then you've got.
In George R. R. Martin, they're like, oh, you still believe in Grumpkins, you know, like
mm-hmm.
making a joke of
well,
the magic.
They
don't believe it.
In the series, they've actually put a lot more magic than you see in the book.
Yeah.
Because in the books, that prologue that everybody has a hard time with, you see, like, supernatural stuff going mm-hmm. on. And then you don't see anything
uh-huh.
else for, like, 3 books.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, it's kind of like fantasy, but there's no magic in it.
And
yeah, then you get there and you're
like,
whoa.
Oh, is this real? Like,
yeah.
They're making fun of it. They don't even believe
themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
The comet in the sky, it means this, and you're reading it like, it doesn't mean anything. It's a comet.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, and one of the differences between the two series is that in Martin's world, it is a world where magic is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because it starts off with no magic, a little bit of magic, a little bit of, ooh, okay, now there's a lot of magic, we've got dragons again. And then in the Wheel of Time, it's a world where the magic is starting to fade.
Yeah, like,
the Aes Sedai are not as powerful as they used to be. They can't produce the wonders that they used to produce in the Age of Legends
anymore.
Not
as many as they were.
And so the Wheel of Time comes more of that Tolkien tradition, where you know the magic is fading, elves are
right?
This is a world that's being passed over to the world of men, basically. Song of Ice and Fire is the opposite of that.
All right, we are going to move into the fan fiction section just because it's so much fun. Favorite slash pairing?
Slash pairing?
Yeah.
Oh,
give me a slash.
Are we crossing streams or no?
Sure, do whatever you want.
All right. I'm not going first, though. I have to.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of Sansa and the Hound, but that's all I got.
Sansa
and the Hound.
Excellent.
That's what I
am. Oh, I don't really do fanfic.
I don't do fanfic either.
I know. I'm trying
to
think of a pairing that didn't. I don't. Okay, so my really out there pairing in the Wheel of Time, and you need to cover your ears.
La, la, la,
okay,
la, la, la.
So I still ship Rand and Egwene really hard.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I kind of wish those two had ended up with each other, but yeah, I understand why they couldn't. But
I always had a soft spot in my heart for Rand and his ladies. Cause
it
felt very close to home.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I've got to put in one for Tech because he's always talking.
Yes, you're done. You're done.
I got to do one for Tech. He's not here, but he's always talking about how he wants the Queen of Thorns and Walder Frey to get married and just taco each other all night long, you know, just like, no, no, it doesn't mean what you think, Doc. It is. No, like, I think that they would drive each other up the wall, but in my opinion, I think that
so
she would win out.
If you're getting into fan fiction, are you going to discuss what George R. R. Martin's thoughts on fan fiction?
Which is why I say I don't do fan fiction.
Yeah.
Really, with this, George R. R. Martin does not like the idea of fan fiction, which is funny because essentially that's what the show is. But he's the only approved fan fiction.
What was Jordan's?
Oh, he didn't like it either. He really didn't like it.
Yeah.
He described himself as this Old Testament god with absolute control over his characters.
Oh, yeah. Don't play with somebody else's
barbies. He didn't want anybody playing in a sandbox.
Yeah.
And it was actually before he passed away. Like, people would always ask, like, you're not looking too healthy, dude. Like, what happens if you die? And he'd be like, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, burn my hard drives if that ever happens.
Oh,
so when he died, we're like, oh, shit. and it was actually, like, very close to the end of his life when he actually gave permission to Harriet, his wife, to find someone else to finish the series. Like, and he wouldn't give her any guidance on it. Like, he wouldn't talk to her about it. He just said, you've got to find someone to do this for me. Because it was such a difficult idea for him, somebody else doing what he couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so Brandon Sanderson, yes, and, you know, if you wanted, you can describe what he did as authorized fanfic, but it's the only fanfic we're ever going to get out of the Wheel of Time. There's just not a whole lot of Wheel of Time fanfic out there anyways.
Yeah.
I can definitely understand an author not being into fanfiction, and especially if you haven't finished writing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. George is very much out there on the internet. He does not have a Twitter or a Facebook, so every time you see something really funny, it's not him. He has a
he's
live
not funny
journal
at all.
That's what he's got. He's got a live journal.
And it's not a blog.
It is not a blog, exactly. But
still working on an Atari.
He says that one of the big reasons is he doesn't want that to influence him, and it's out there, and he tries to ignore it. But we need to get Laura Nicole's / pairing. Come on.
Arya and Edgeween.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Because they would fight, and then they'd make up afterwards. I have a sick of
you're crossing the streams.
That's what I want, man.
And
I really want crossovers.
I had too much juice.
I will say a lot of my / pairings, the series are really pushing. So it was like, you know, with Martin, a lot of the stuff that he did was like really subtle. So some of us think, oh, this is exactly what that means. And then other people think, had no clue, you know, much like Renly and Loras, people are like, what are you talking about? They're not gay. And
why are they loving on the show?
Specifically said to the producers, you have to make this explicit because one of his big frustrations is that people don't get all of his subtle hints.
You know, okay, this isn't something I'd really thought of crossing the streams before, but Elida and the Red Woman, Melisandre. Mm-hmm. They're both red women.
Yes, I say.
All right.
Only horrible things would come from that.
Oh, yes.
Only
the world would burn.
I don't want to see the shadow babies from that.
No.
Why, hello there. My name is Dr. John H. Watson, most recently of Her Majesty's service. By now, I'm sure you're very aware of my dear friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. It may be immodest of me to say, but I believe the stories of our many adventures have been shared far and wide throughout the world. And it does my heart good to see there's still a great interest in them. In fact, the interest is so great that a lady named Tabitha Grace Smith, or Tabs as you may have heard her name shortened to, has decided to do a Kickstarter project for a deck of Sherlock Holmes based playing cards. The cards are beautifully illustrated by some amazing artists. In addition to the deck, there are also other fantastic odds and ends that you may pick up as a reward for your backing of this project, including an ebook called Why We Love Holmes, with contributions by famed Sherlockian Leslie Klinger, Geek Media Mavens Bonnie Burton and Jenna Bush, celebrated sci-fi and fantasy author Stephanie Osborne, and much more. The campaign only runs for 30 days and begins May 22nd, 2014. So, hurry back if you'd like to have Holmes and I always have ready for a good game of whist, or whatever you find people are playing these days. If you'd like to learn more, please visit SherlockHolmesDeck.com.
So now it is time for our audience participation, and what I'm going to have people do is I want you to give me one of your favorite lines or quotes from either George R. R. Martin or Robert Jordan, and it doesn't have to be A Song of Ice and Fire or Wheel of Time. It can be anything that they wrote, so let's hear some wild cards and other stuff. So who's going first? Oh, you guys suck. Come on. Favorite lines. Anyone.
Nobody's actually read the books here, have they?
You know nothing.
All right. You know nothing, Jon Snow. Doc. Marsbar.
Hodor.
Hodor! Hey, you get two for that because he's a giant. Oh, sorry. There you go. Next. Come on, people. Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you right now. There's a...
Oh,
hey,
oh,
we got Valar Morghulis.
No Wheel of Time love from the audience?
Yes.
I wish I understood women like Rand does.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a
parent
line, right?
Because does he really understand women?
No. Not
I really find it funny.
Yeah.
What
happens when you spend time in the box?
Hang on.
Lost forever.
Can you start over?
Weep for Monothera and weep for what has been lost forever.
Sorry, I hate the feeling on that one. You should.
You.
I am horrible. All right, next. Come on, people.
I gave you one earlier, you people.
I'll tell you one thing. There is one quote that I tell everyone, especially the whole prologue problem. It's, look, read the first book, and if you get to the line, the things I do for love, and you're not hooked, you're allowed to put it down. So,
sure.
The things I do for love. I'm going to throw this out blindly.
And you broke.
That's what happens when you don't quote. I
okay.
Throw blindly.
So I want to ask you, there's some comic book adaptations or graphic novels. You've got New Spring that was put out partially by the Dingle Brothers. And then you also have the Duncan Egg stories that were put up by the same people.
Yeah.
So you even have the same artists working on it. What are your opinions on that?
I'm kind of biased on New Spring because I was one of the continuity editors on
Oh, yeah?
It. Yeah.
Awesome.
I did a lot of the consultations on it. I like New Spring, the way they adapted it a lot. I have not checked out the Duncan Egg stuff, though. I mean, I've read the Duncan Egg stories. I just haven't looked at the graphic versions of it. They did a pretty good job on establishing the visual motif of the Wheel of Time and what everything would look
I
like.
I loved the way they had the weavings.
That,
like,
you know, that
visualized.
Was like a three-day argument
it
trying to figure out how that was going to look on the page.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The Duncan Egg graphic novels I absolutely love because I read those before reading the stories.
Oh, yeah?
I will say I'm not a fan of the Game of Thrones comics.
Yeah, I have.
There's nothing wrong with it. The art is fine. It's just it feels to me like, yeah, okay, I've read and seen all this. Anyway,
Sansa kind of looks like an 11-year-old.
That, well,
which I mean is frankly pretty close, but still.
So, final thoughts and where people can find you. Let's go around the table. Final thoughts.
Keep reading, keep listening, and try to get past the things that annoy you because I know I'm going to. And you can find my stuff at www.gypsylore.com, Gypsy in the Attic Podcast, and Stonebriar Case Files.
Ding!
Okay. If you're a Wheel of Time fan, you should come to JordanCon. It's in Atlanta. It's next April. And our guest of honor next year is Saladin Ahmad. And our artist guest is Todd Lockwood. You can find out about JordanCon at JordanCon.org. It's on Twitter as JordanCon, Inc., I-N-C. It's on Facebook. We have a ridiculously active Facebook group. Don't join it unless you really like a lot of posts about crazy things that we do at the
crazy
convention.
Awesome.
It is pretty awesome. You can also find me at dragamount.com. I'm dragamount on Twitter and on Facebook. Anything Wheel of Time related, I probably have my fingers in it somewhere.
What do I have to say about the books? Don't take anything too seriously.
That's good advice for life.
It really is. That's all I got, though. We're SkinnerGo, skinner.fm. Come see us on the Facebook.
There you go.
Mob.
And yes, I'm going to agree and say read, read, read. Listen to my other podcast, Beyond the Wall, because it's just fun. And just have fun with it. Life is too short to read only one author, so read them all. Thank you, everyone. And can I get a show of hands? Who thinks Jordan joined us? Since he's the ghost of honor, he's supposed to be here. Who thinks he came to this panel? Or was he at Cooley's thing?
No.
He hates Oscar.
All right, thank you, everyone. You can find Nutty Bites at nimlas.org. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/nuttybites. And you can find, all the links at nimlas.org. But please keep it awesome. Listen to Nutty Bites. And I will see you Balticon people next year. Thank you.
Do you like listening to audio science fiction? Are you a fan of writers reading their work? My name is Mike Luoma. By day, I play tunes on the radio. The rest of the time, I'm creating science fiction and comic books. And I bring my two worlds together each week with my glow-in-the-dark radio podcast, where I read you my stuff. You hear free science fiction audio adaptations every week. And I give away the audio versions after I've podcast them, too. Free science fiction audiobooks on iTunes and at podiobooks.com. I hope you'll check out my glow-in-the-dark radio podcast or any of my free science fiction audiobooks at glowinthedarkradio.com. I'm Mike Luoma. Thanks for listening.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.